normal American teenage boys follow sports teams. And since my buddies and I came of age in the 1970s in San Diego, you'd think we might have obsessed over the starting lineup of the San Diego Chargers or the San Diego Padres. The thing is, we weren't normal American teenage boys. We played musical instruments, and not the normal kind of instruments that teenagers in the 1970s played, like electric guitars and drums. No, we were brass players. Trumpet, trombone, French horn, and tuba, and aspired not to be in a famous rock band, but in a famous symphony orchestra. And in that rarefied world, so out of step with what was going on in the 1970s, the team we followed, the team we would argue about late into the night over our beers, before we were supposed to be drinking beers, wasn't exactly a team at all. It was a brass section. It was the Chicago Symphony Orchestra Brass Section, CSO Brass for short. Those were words we would utter with reverence. We were the brass section of the San Diego Youth Symphony. We had rehearsals every Saturday at the Casa del Prado and Balboa Park, and performed most Sundays at 1 and 3. No Grateful Dead for us. We were listening to LPs of the CSO playing the serious stuff. In our late-night drinking and listening sessions, Richard Gordon, our first trombone, would shush us to make us notice the glories of what was coming up in the recording. His eyes closed, a beer in one hand while pointing to the heavens with his other, jabbing the air to cue the entrances of our heroes playing their solos. Bud Herseth on trumpet, Arnold Jacobs on tuba, Dale Clevenger on French horn. At such moments, we sat quietly listening and shook our heads at the wonder of it. In our adolescent snobbery, we considered our brass section to be the best and most important part of the Youth Symphony. Those string players and woodwinds were our backup musicians, there to showcase our artistry and power. Like Chicago, we played perfectly in tune, right in the center of our notes, but also, and this was just as important, so friggin' loud you'd have to run for cover. And we did it without electronics. We played Chicago style. As in sports, the best of us went professional early. Our first trumpet, Tim Lawler, just out of college, went to Germany to land first trumpet gigs in orchestra where the pay was better. Richard Gordon, our first trombone, established his career in the San Diego Symphony and Opera. But the most successful of our gang was our tuba player, the always smiling, always loving that deep, crushing sound of locomotives, always ready to play Flight of the Bumblebee on his tuba, Gene Picorni. After playing with the Israel Philharmonic, Utah Symphony, and St. Louis Symphony, Gene showed up for the blind audition at Orchestra Hall in Chicago. Along with scores of other top contenders from around the world, Gene was shown the carpet he was to walk on out to the chair and music stand waiting behind the curtain. Gene wasn't allowed to speak, cough, or make any sound other than the music coming out of that big silver bell of his tuba. For this was a blind audition. Candidates were not allowed to make any sound that might reveal them as a man or woman. The conductor, Sir George Schulte, was one of those listening behind the curtain. Lightning struck, along with deep, rumbling thunder that the musical high court must have felt down to their shoe leather. Gene, our Gene, got the job. Our old gang from San Diego, we were gobsmacked. One of our own actually made it to the CSO brass section. When speaking of his new position, Gene told me much later he thought of himself as the base of the pyramid. The more sound he could put into the base of the pyramid, the greater everybody else in the brass section would sound. Gene was the cleanup man, the anchor man. So what does all this have to do with our America the Bilingual podcast? Last year, when I traveled to Chicago to give a talk on bilingualism, I rang up Gene and we met for lunch. Gene told me about a new first-year trumpet in Chicago named Esteban Batillan from Spain. Gene really enjoyed playing with him, and he told me that in addition to being an amazing player, of course, Esteban was a really nice guy. And how was it that a Spaniard could win this coveted seat in the heartland of America? Well, I already knew the answer, because he was the best, simple as that. And the best can come from anywhere, although Spain, as it turns out, is not a total surprise, as Spain happens to be legendary not only for producing flamenco guitarists, but for trumpeters as well. So now, over lunch with Gene at this Greek restaurant, I got curious. How did this Spaniard navigate the human languages during his career? What was his language biography, as I call it? Was English a huge challenge for him, the way it is for so many? I asked Gene, can you introduce me to Esteban? You're about to meet the 42-year-old principal trumpet of this legendary sound and hear the story of his verbal languages and how they come into play as he makes the universal language of music. I'm Steve Levine. Welcome to episode 77 of America the Bilingual.
It's the first experience that I have talking about the connection with the language and the music. Which I always thought it makes a lot of sense and it makes a difference. Of course, just not culturally speaking, but phonetically speaking, it makes a difference the way you react with your instrument and your own skills to play an instrument. It doesn't mean better or worse, it just means different. I'm Esteban Batallan, and I am the principal trumpet of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
And where are we right now?
We are right now at Orchestra Hall, Symphony Center in Chicago, just a few hours before the December 17th CSO Brass Concert. So I grew up like a bilingual because I speak Spanish, obviously, but I speak my regional language, which is Galician.
Galician?
From Galicia, the northwest of Spain. Portuguese became easy for me because Galician is supposed to be a mix of Portuguese and Spanish, but it's not considered a dialect.
When did you start hearing Spanish and speaking Spanish? When you went to school?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. We had Castilian lessons at school. When I was 15, I started speaking more Spanish with what we say in Spain, with that funny Galician accent, which is mainly all the vocals are way too open.
So give us an example of Spanish with a Galician accent.
Let me find a phrase to say. For example, I will tell you, hola Steve, nos vemos mañana a las 7:30 para el concierto.
Hi Steve, we're going to see each other tomorrow for
exactly.
The concert that at 7:30.
That will be with the most purest Spanish accent.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to say it with the same language, but with that Galician accent, and it will be like, hola Steven, mañana nos vemos a las 7:30 en el concierto.
Okay, well, I still understand you.
Yeah, it's just...
To me, it sounds like a little Italian accent almost.
That's why, many years after, it was so easy for me to learn Italian.
Really?
I always speak Italian fluently.
Do you? Okay,
and work in Italy for a year and a half.
We'll get to his Italian in a bit. When were you first exposed to English?
I might say 14.
In school?
Yeah. And that time it was not the same educational system as today. So it was a very basic English class. Everybody who went to school with me, unless they really cared afterwards about learning English, none of them remembers anything from those classes.
And you started trumpet so early.
6 and a half.
So is it fair to say that music was your third language?
No doubt. Yeah, it's a language. It's the most international language. No matter where you are from, you are going to understand each other always.
Esteban was accepted into the highly selective National Youth Orchestra of Spain when he was just 15.
And I started to speak a little bit more in English because we will have teachers from overseas coming, from England, Germany, France. So English was, unless they spoke Spanish, English was always the first choice to communicate.
What about conductors?
Yeah, same.
So you get some conductor, they're directing you in English. You had enough English to understand what was going on?
Not enough, but we tried.
At 18, Esteban landed his first professional gig.
In the southeast of Spain, in Granada, Andalusia.
What a beautiful town that is.
Amazing town. A lot of history. Alhambra, all that. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
It was the first and only time in Esteban's career that he would be associate principal trumpet, that is, second trumpet.
But after 6 months, the principal left to the Barcelona Symphony.
Meaning the principal trumpet.
So I became interim principal trumpet, and then 2 years after, when they opened the job, I won the job.
You mean only 6 months of your entire career were you not principal trumpet?
Correct.
That's pretty awesome. Esteban was in Granada long enough that his Spanish adapted to the Andalusian way of talking. As Esteban explains, it started sounding a bit like Southern Spanish. The U.S., as it turns out, is not the only country that has a Southern accent.
It would probably sound very, very similar to Spanish. It's just the way of saying it, which is a little bit more singing.
Okay.
And some typical phrases like, hey, how are you? They say, ¿qué pasa, hijo?
Whoa, I wouldn't get that one.
Yeah, it's like, how are you, dude?
Yeah.
¿Qué pasa, tío?
After Granada came principal guest spots with the Sevilla Symphony Orchestra and the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam. One of the world's most famous orchestras. What was it like?
It was challenging because my English was very poor, but I lost the fear of communicating with people while we talk about music.
Because most of his use of English was in musical settings, Esteban learned musical vocabulary in English, as a doctor might learn medical vocabulary in Spanish. And then, after Amsterdam, Esteban reached another pinnacle, ascending to one of the world's most famous opera houses.
In 2015, I went to Milan.
Milan.
I work in Teatro La Scala.
Wow. The famous La Scala.
Yes.
New country.
New country, new language.
New language. So what did you do? At first, Esteban said, he tried mixing Spanish with English to approximate Italian, but then a light bulb moment.
I realized that he was really close to Galician. Till the point that we have the same words as they do for some things.
How can that be? Because they're not next to each other.
No, but Galician comes from Latin as well, same as Italian. So for example, door.
Puerta in Spanish.
In Spanish, puerta. In Galician and Italian is porta.
Porta.
Same as Portuguese. Knife.
Cuchillo.
Cuchillo.
In Spanish.
In Portuguese, Galician and Italian is coitelo.
Coitelo.
The difference is that we say coitelo and they say coltelo.
Coltelo.
But it's basically the same.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Did you know that before you?
No.
No.
I learned, I can't tell you, I learned the basic stuff in Italian in 2 weeks. And in 2 months, I was able to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because of your Galician.
Because of my Galician.
That is so fascinating. Our young prodigy had already played first trumpet in 3 European countries, but one musical epiphany was still in front of him, and it would change his life. It came when he first heard a recording of Mahler performed by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
The only names I knew were Berlin Philharmonic and Vienna Philharmonic and London Symphony.
Really didn't know anything about Chicago.
I didn't know even where Chicago was.
Yeah. Wow. So what was it like hearing that recording?
When I heard that sound and that volume and that intensity and that way of playing was like, what is this? I became a huge fan, mainly because of the impact of that big brass sound together that was, even through the speakers, was mind-blowing. Of course, at that age, the biggest impact was the loud.
Yeah, how can they play that loud and that good?
Over time, I became even more impressed with the soft, comparing with the loud.
Yes.
Because it's very extreme. And I started to buy as much as possible
of the Chicago
Symphony to learn how that was or what the guy was doing.
That guy was Adolf Herseth, who everybody just called Bud, a revered figure. He was one of the heroes that my high school music buddies and I would listen to. Bud was principal trumpet of the Chicago Symphony for more than half a century, from 1948 until 2001, and principal trumpet emeritus for another 3 years. The orchestra's principal trumpet chair is named after him. He became one of Esteban's heroes.
And I started to define, through the recordings, when Herseth was having a more or less round sound, or how he was making a phrase, or where he was breathing, or the type of articulation that he was using for Bruckner or Mahler or Shostakovich, and always that sound in my ears with that sizzling.
Did you model that sound?
That was what I wanted to do. That was the way I wanted to play.
What did you want?
I wanted to sound like him. I wanted to sit on his chair.
Esteban has done more than that. He's also played Bud Herseth's trumpet, one of 5 special Vincent Bach Stradivarius trumpets that the symphony purchased in the 1950s. And what's it like to play on?
Well, it's a dream. There are other trumpets that are really famous as well. But I hold on my hands one of them, no doubt.
And you do it great honor.
I try, you know, with all the respect and admiration and responsibility that I have, because in the end, I'm not responsible to just be sitting on a chair playing some notes. I'm responsible to keep Adolf Herseth's legacy to the future. That's my only goal.
Esteban auditioned with the CSO in 2017 after he finished his guest performances at La Scala. It was actually his second time auditioning.
The first one was 2003, but that doesn't count. I was 19 and I just wanted to come to Chicago so badly.
He now knew where it was.
And I crossed with Herseth right in the hallway where my picture is today, right in that spot.
Ooh, what was that like?
Oh, I was shaking. There was a guy, short guy with a trumpet case that passed by my side and said, hello. And I couldn't even say hello, Mr. Herseth. Just imagine how poor my English was back then.
And you were maybe a little awestruck?
Obviously. That was the guy. It was the only time I saw him.
Esteban's English noticeably improved when he was principal trumpet of the Hong Kong Philharmonic for their 2018-19 season. But he soon realized that his heart belonged with the Chicago Symphony. And so he said the 2 words he had learned in Cantonese before he departed Hong Kong.
Thank you.
Oh, and how do you say thank you?
M'goy.
You speak many different languages.
I do.
Does your trumpet speak different languages?
Of course.
How?
It's not the same to play Berti than playing Mahler or Bruckner or Shostakovich, mainly because of the approach of the sound concept that you might have of each different composer or each different region where the music comes from. Mm-hmm. But also, I think it's connected strictly with the phonetics. There is something that we do with the trumpet that is called flutterato.
I don't know what that is.
The flutter. Uh-huh. We do.
You're rolling your tongue.
Exactly. For the people who speak a language with a really strong R,
yeah,
it's easier than people who doesn't speak a strong R. For example, I can say. That's because of the phonetics of the language. It's also the approach of the different tones of the vocals. It's not the same to say ah than ah or oh, or the same as e, e, e. It changes the color of the instrument. It's good for phrasing. It's good for color pitch-wise as well.
As much as Esteban revered Bud Herseth, there are a few other trumpeters that he also counts among his heroes. Coincidentally, he met another of them right at the very spot where Esteban and I were talking, in the green room below the stage at Chicago Symphony Hall. And for this first meeting, Esteban's English was much better.
Wynton Marsalis is the whole package. He's classically trained, beautiful player, amazing jazz player with extraordinary skills for the instrument and a great musician, composer.
He called you one of the very best trumpeters to have ever played our instrument. How does that make you feel?
Well, that makes me feel overwhelmed, obviously, because the person that he comes from and the meaning that he has for me in my career. I told him personally, I said, you made an impact on my career as a musician. And he said, well, the same as Herseth made on mine. So I think now we are full circle.
Wow.
Yeah. And this was right here on this basement when wow. When I first met him 3 or 4 years ago.
Another of Esteban's heroes is Arturo Sandoval, the Cuban-American who won 10 Grammys. He is primarily a jazz trumpeter, although he also plays classical.
We became extremely good friends right away.
What language do you speak together?
Spanish.
Then Esteban told me how it came about that Arturo wrote a piece for him.
I arrived to his house and he said, hey, I prepared something for us. I'm going to play something on the piano and this is the melody. I said, wait a minute. I have to write down that. And we recorded a video in 10 minutes right after that. I'm playing with his flugelhorn and his mouthpiece because I didn't have any equipment. And he's playing on the piano and I didn't know anything, but I wrote on a napkin a few notes just to be able to follow this stuff. Wow. And that was when this piece was born.
Is it a Spanish piece?
I might say it's a balada. It's extremely beautiful. And the only thing I told him is that the name of the piece doesn't match the beauty of the piece. Because it's called Mr. Batallan. So with my name, so it's too strong. And then it's just the melody's floating. And then he sent it to an orchestrator from Hollywood, Bob Barrett. And he made it so beautiful.
I've listened to it. It's incredibly beautiful. And you've been listening to portions of it just now. We'll tell you how to enjoy the entire piece in our episode notes. Are there some musical expressions better conveyed in Spanish or Italian than they are in English?
Not really. But I put some Spanish words in between sometimes.
Like what? Like, let's go.
Vamos, let's go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or Italian, whenever we refer to Dynamics piano. Legato.
Legato means?
Very smooth and phrasing with a very uh-huh. connected phrase.
What would you say to Americans who say, why bother learning another language? Everybody speaks English.
Well, I think nowadays that's changing a little bit. Because Chinese might be, if not the first, the second language in the world. I still think that Spanish might be in the first or second position. English is the third one.
Do you think monolinguals are missing out on anything?
No, I don't think so.
And yet, when I met with Esteban, he and his wife were expecting their first child, a boy. They already have their first division of duty as parents.
I'm going to talk to him in Galician, actually. And my wife, it's from Galicia as well, but she's a Spanish speaker.
So you're going to give your son a bilingual upbringing at home with Galician and Spanish.
And English at the school. So I'm hoping it will be trilingual.
What a lucky boy. Esteban is on the faculty of DePaul University. His students, the next generation of trumpet players. He told me that he always reminds them that curiosity is free. So when you say to your students, curiosity is free, what are you trying to
that
convey?
That they have to expand their, just not abilities, but also their knowledge. And they have to find their own path. We present them, the same as my mentor, my teacher, Javier Viceiro in Spain, he did with me. He presented me with a variety of options, and I chose the one that I thought it was the correct for me.
When our interview was wrapping up, one of Esteban's students showed up for his lesson. He was a young Mexican-American who carried his trumpet in a leather case swung over his shoulder so he could carry two café con leches, one for him and one for Esteban. When Esteban stepped out for a moment, the student told me how great a teacher Esteban is. I don't want to play in a classical orchestra like Esteban, he told me. I'm studying mariachi, and Esteban is helping me improve my playing. When Esteban returned, we continued our conversation.
I think it's important to share the experiences that you have and what you learn over the years to the next generation. So I try to tell my students what I felt as a kid, how I grew up, what I had to go through to get to the point that I am. And then we speak about music, about technique. I was able to meet Dale Clevenger back in the day, and we became
the famous first French horn player.
Correct. Yes. We became actually friends. And he was the kind of person that inspired me even more. It's a phrase that is on the CSO Brass History video. Dale says, if somebody is fortunate enough to be at the place that I was, the place that I am, it's not about fame, it's not about fortune, it's about being given a gift and giving it back. So that means to me, we are lucky to be occupying this spot right now. We are renting the chairs. There was somebody else before, and there will be somebody else afterwards. So we have to make sure that whatever we do keeps moving to the next generation.
My thanks to the America the Bilingual team who worked on this episode, Mim Harrison, our editorial and brand director, who wrote and directed it, Fernando Hernandez Becerra, who produced the episode from his studio in Guadalajara, Mexico, Esta No Es Radio, and Jen Cavanaro at Daruma Tech, who manages our website. And a special thanks to my friend Gene Picorni, the now legendary tuba player for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Thanks for listening. Gracias por escuchar. For America the Bilingual, this is Steve Levine.